Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Today we're talking politics and civic engagement with Lindsay Cormack, author of How to Raise the Citizen. Welcome to the JX, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Well, let's start with your story. Tell us who you are and why'd you write this book?
Well, I'm an associate professor over at Stevens Institute of Technology. I teach political science mostly to a set of students who are going on for engineering degrees. I've done this for 10 years, and I wrote this book because of my experience with them. I have students who are so good at doing school, they're great at taking tests, they go on to bright careers, but oftentimes they don't know the very basics of how the U.S. government works. They don't know things about state politics and local politics, and they don't really know how to wield their power. As part of my job, I took on this role of getting our students registered to vote and helping them go to the polls. But every time we do this, we have multiple that are turned away because they're either not registered or they're not registered in the right county. And after seeing that for so long, I was like, well, this is awful, and it's not quite their fault. You know, if they don't know how to do this, no one gets a little magic pill when they turn 18 and says, here's how you know everything. And so I set out with six research assistants to look at how we teach civics throughout the United States. And what became clear to us is that this isn't something that can be solved simply in schools. It's something that we really need an all-hands-on-deck approach, and parents in our own homes and families have to take on this responsibility.
Well, so many parents say that they hate politics. So why do you think this knowledge is important?
Yeah, I hear that a lot, too. And because, you know, we don't really like talking about this thing, it just doesn't get talked about. But nothing that is going wrong gets better by ignoring it and putting our head in the sand. And I kind of think about it like a medical emergency. If you had something going wrong medically, you'd seek opinions from doctors, you'd talk to your friends who maybe had those experiences, and you'd try to figure something out. I kind of think what we're in right now is something that's like a civic emergency, where we think someone else is going to fix it and it's going to get better, but really no one's coming to fix it. And it's kind of up to us to write this. So it's on us as parents to take charge and do these sorts of things so that our kids can grow up and know that politics is good, it can be good, it can work for them, but they have to know a little bit more.
Well, you write in your intro, given the broken state of our politics, it's important for parents to step up to the task. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think a lot of parents today were raised where they might have had households that said talking about politics is off limits. It's kind of taboo, or it sits in the same space of talking about like sex or drugs or religion or money. And that's not a way out of this problem. I don't know anyone who thinks politics is feeling and functioning that well right now. No one else is going to fix it. So it's up to us as parents to say, I don't want that for our kids. I don't want these politics that feel really painful to continue. So we have to be willing to do a little hard work, know a little more, and engage with the system in a better way.
Well, I know that my kids, they're homeschooled, so we have them sit around the table when we're filling out our ballots, and we have these discussions about civic participation. They actually even put the ballots in the ballot box because we're a mail-in state. But a lot of parents don't do that. So when you're talking about bringing up young kids to have an appreciation of civic engagement, what are some of the suggestions that you have for parents?
Yeah, I like that practice. I do the same thing with my daughter. Well, I think something that's important for parents to realize is that our kids are modeling us not just for what we do, but for what we don't do. And so if they never see us engaging with this, they get the message that caring about politics doesn't matter. And so I think the first thing we have to do is recognize our responsibility. They look up to us and we have the most time with them before they become voting eligible citizens. And so we have to model good behaviors and processes so that they understand how to do these things. And it doesn't have to be that hard. Things that are simple, like take your kids to vote with you, or if you have a mail-in state, let them see that process and think about these things with you. It's also important to recognize that our kids do get political messages, but oftentimes it's really negative. They might hear things on the media, or they'll hear people saying, you know, everyone in politics is in it for themselves. They're all liars. It's all rigged. Even in children's media, they get pictures of things like they'll have a mayor in a cartoon town that's like a bumbling doofus or out to do harm to a community. We as parents have to recognize there is a role for us to play in saying, hey, guess what? If our streets are working well, that's government at play. If we have good drinking water, someone in the government cares about that. If our playgrounds are up to date, yes, someone cares in government. There are bright spots. We just have to find them and make sure we can point them out and talk to our kids about them.
Well, you write on page 20 Really great insight into why so many college students don't vote. It boils down to a lack of preparation. If it's possible, can you read that part from your book?
Yes, I've got it queued up. This problem is symptomatic of a larger crisis in political know-how. It is after watching this happen for a decade and hearing increasing complaints about our seemingly dysfunctional politics that I decided to take on this topic at length. We are failing our young people by not teaching and talking enough about politics and government. As states reduce civics education and teachers navigate restrictive mandates, the issue only grows more dire. And this is not because children do not want to know about these things. The 2023 Harvard Kennedy School's annual youth poll demonstrated an enormous level of interest among young people in becoming involved in politics. It's that they lack the know-how because our systems are failing them. Right now, we have a very low level of government and political knowledge in the United States, but that also means there's a great potential for positive change. Parents can be the one to start this change by recognizing that imparting the knowledge necessary to become a participating citizen is a parenting responsibility and one that needs to be taken up by each of us.
You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. I'm Mike Green. I'm talking with Lindsay Cormack about her new book, How to Raise a Citizen. So, Lindsay, how are parents supposed to teach their kids if they don't know this information?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And really, that's kind of how I structured this book. The book is set up in two parts. Part one is sort of this, like, how to raise a citizen in terms of recognizing a problem, seeing that schools aren't doing it, understanding why schools can't really do this, and then giving parents frameworks to have those discussions. But the second part is a primer, and it's sort of an understanding that a lot of us were failed by school systems that didn't prioritize this either. And so it's not like a scoldy, finger-waggy book that says, like, oh, you should know more. It's one that says, hey, I get it. I understand why you don't know that much. You were failed by systems too. But we don't want to do the same thing to our kids. So the second half really gives parents an understanding in the very basics that can allow them to go into conversations with more confidence because they'll just have a little bit better footing to do it with.
Well, you write that democracy is something, quote, many of us opt out of because it feels bad, but that doesn't have to be the case, end quote. Talk more about that.
Yeah, when I look at things like how many people turn out to vote in primary elections, in my area and many places across the country, it's in the low teens. So like 12 to 15% of people will come and turn out to do those things. And then we get unhappy that we have these general election candidates that don't really represent our values. When we opt out of these things, either because we don't want to and it feels bad, or because we haven't taken the time to figure out when these elections happen, politics happens to us in ways that we don't necessarily like or agree with. It doesn't have to be that way. We can participate in these things, but we really do have to increase our collective know-how of how to do that.
So do you believe that understanding our democratic process and actively participating in it is a valued asset that we can pass down to each generation, like generational wealth?
I absolutely think so, because we know that politics is a game of personalities and attention. And if you have the ability to figure things out, you can master both of those. We have a good, like, we're all able to assess if we like someone or don't like someone, think they're a leader or not. The attention part is figuring out how to turn that desire into an outcome. Do you know when to register? Do you know when to come to the election? Do you know how to talk to someone if something's not going right in your town? And all of these things are just little pieces that a lot of us think are like extra credit or not really a part of our life. But truly, having political power allows you to change the outcourse of your life. It allows you to figure out ways to make your own community better. So I think it's a very good value for us to pass down to our kids.
Well, a lot of us tend to think, well, that's someone else's job, or that person's more qualified than I am, so I'll let them make the decisions. Is that a good attitude?
I hear that so often, too, and it's as if we're all passengers on this little boat of democracy or something. We're like, hey, I don't really like where this is going. And you don't really understand the view. But what we don't realize is we are not passengers. We are the crew. If we want to right things, we have to do that sort of work. No one else is coming to save us, and it's inevitable that politics happens anyway. So I think it's better if we sort of understand the process and make it work for us.
So when we think of politics, we naturally think of the two dominant political parties, obviously Republicans and Democrats. But you write, quote, it's not about raising children to align with a particular political party, but about raising engaged and informed citizens. And emerging research suggests that attempts to steer our children toward a specific political party can backfire, end quote. How so?
Well, we all know that when we have kids, we want to raise them with their own values. That's sort of the whole idea behind doing it in the first place. But when we look at political socialization research, it's very mixed on how successful one can be in imparting the way that they see the world to their child. So sometimes, you know, if you said, you know, I'm really intent on raising a little Republican, I'm going to talk about Republican talking points, I'm going to figure it out with them, and they're going to get it, you might get the outcome you want. But it's kind of a coin toss, because sometimes you'll get a child who rebels and says, you know what, actually, I prefer the other party. And I like to think about it as raising athletes. If you want to raise a good athlete, you teach them the rules of the game and you do conditioning exercises with them to practice. That's different than raising a good fan. A good fan is someone who maybe understands the team lore and knows who to cheer for. And in politics, we're not really spectators or fans. We need to be the athletes and participants. So parents who want to have powerful kids who are rooted in their understanding of the world should be focused on just making sure they get how the things work. Let them pick their parties later on, because parties change and people change, and it's okay for them to see the world differently than we do.
Well, I know a lot of kids who become athletes because their parents were athletes. And I know many people who say they vote the way they do because that's the way their parents and grandparents voted. They tend to align with a political party as part of their identity. You're saying something else, like understanding the underlying structures. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, because we know that, you know, we do want our kids to see things similarly than us. And oftentimes they will, because they're going to have lives that are similar to the ones that we've led. But what I want is for kids to understand the rules of the game, because the people who are in power, the parties that are popular at the time, those things change. What doesn't really change is the underlying structure. What doesn't change is how you connect to someone who's in a position of power to say, hey, I'd like to have something fixed, or if not, there's a way for me to hold you accountable. That doesn't really rely on which party is dominant at the time. It relies on understanding how the system works, and I think that's far more important.
Well, the structure of your book gave a synopsis of each chapter before I read them. Why'd you construct it that way?
Well, I'm glad that you read it like that, because that's how I intended it. There's some things that not everyone needs. Some of this book is going to be towards people who have political science degrees. They're not going to need to brush up on Chapter 7 on the Constitution. But they might say, you know, I do feel uncomfortable talking to my kids about that, so maybe I'll go to 3 and 4. Or maybe there's people who just want to know why we got to this place in the first place, and so Chapters 1 and 2 are good for that. And I think it's important to give people options. We're all busy. It's hard to get an entire book read. So if you can pick and choose what makes sense for your own place and what you know already, I think that's kind of helpful.
Well, you encourage parents to engage in conversations with their kids about politics and government, and you provide 3 things to keep in mind when doing so. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, I think it's important that parents recognize their role. I think that's one of the hardest things, is we sometimes don't know that we have to do this work with our kids. And so if we are, you know, unaware of that, we might not do it in the best way possible. And sometimes we fall prey to saying just negative things. And that's just not that, that's not functional for them, and it doesn't inspire them to do things later in life. I think it's also important that we're willing to research with them. We're willing to say, you know what, I don't know that, but let me learn a little bit more with you. Because oftentimes our kids are going to ask us questions and we won't know it, because we're not all political experts. That's fine. They don't need that from us. They just need us to show them the process of learning a little bit more. It's also important that we need to restrain our own negativity in that recognition of our role. So when we talk about it, we have to be willing to do it, but make sure it's not all bad, because then they're never going to want to lean in to know more.
So recognize our role, be willing to conduct the research, and restrain our own negativity.
Yes.
So, Lindsay, you warn in the book that an underdeveloped understanding of politics has serious consequences. You write, quote, "Limited civic participation is one consequence, as is vulnerability to manipulation and misinformation, as well as the erosion of trust in government," end quote. Do you believe it's important to have trust in government?
I believe it's important for us to understand things, and we can't trust things that we don't understand. If our government doesn't have a outlook that we can trust. We will only know that if we understand what we should be looking for. And so sometimes governments let us down. But oftentimes, our local and state governments are doing the best they can, and it requires us knowing a little bit more in order to make those sorts of assessments.
One of the challenges I have, personally, when I'm listening to politicians, is that typically a politician who is telling me what the other side stands for is often either lying or intentionally attacking that person. And so when we talk about manipulation and misinformation, if it's coming directly from the candidate's mouth, how do we address that? How do we deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great concern. I think a lot of people have that. And we see that in federal politics a lot more than we do in state and local politics. But in order for us to like figure out that this is not true, what the person is saying, we have to have invested some amount of time to figure out what was true. And that usually means that you're looking at the primary source of the opposition, whoever's like said that they're saying, oh, they believe something else. And that is a good process for us to say, let me learn more. Let me figure out about this person so that when someone says something that's counter to it, I can kind of be like, I don't know if that squares away with my understanding. If we just decide to put our heads in the sand, we can't make those sorts of determinations. And so while it's frustrating when some politicians do this activity, we are only able to discern if that's what's happening if we've leaned in and figured something out to begin with.
So it sounds like you're saying we have a lot of homework to do on our own.
I think we do, and I think it's something that's not actually that bad because politics is really powerful, and I've seen it in my own life on the state and local level. When things aren't going the way that you want, if you get enough people together, you can really change outcomes in ways that you want. And so it's not that bad. It just does take a little bit of work.
Now, when you say it just takes a little bit of work, if there's a lot of manipulation and misinformation and disinformation out there, and now there's AI and there's so many different ways to manipulate information, how do we know what we can trust?
Yeah, that's really hard too, because we know that like media literacy and digital literacy are all wrapped up in this because we're going to get bombarded with things that we can't really verify. And that's why I think understanding the process matters. So much of the information that I consume online is trying to scare people into something that's like going to be very bad or something that seems like it's going to be possible. But I'm usually not put off by it too much because I understand the limits to our powers and I understand the limits to government powers. And I think the more of us that understand these things, the less we're going to be living in fear of stuff. And the more we can stand up and say, no, actually, that's probably not going to happen. Here's why. Here's the pieces that I can point to in either our founding documents or in state government documents or local government documents that are protections against these things. But we have to know more instead of just allowing ourselves to be scared.
That's a good point. In Chapter 2, you go into how government works. After all, if people don't know how the government actually operates, they can't really teach what they don't know. And they're less likely to participate. But how do you get governments, or how do you get adults interested in learning a subject they've largely ignored or been ignorant of most of their lives?
I think that's like the hardest uphill battle that I'm facing right now, but it is the reason that I wrote this book. No one that I know really likes how our politics feels or how it's functioning. And we have to do something different because if we continue on this path, which is deprioritizing civics, having people graduate into a system that they don't understand how to use or influence, I don't see how that gets us to a better outcome. So this is my attempt at saying, you know what? I get it. This sucks. It doesn't feel that good, but it could feel better. We have to take responsibility for this. Even though this mess really isn't ours, we didn't make this, the parents of today, but we are the ones who can fix it. And so whether or not, you know, people want to take that up, if it's a hot topic, I can't really say, but I can say that I'm trying in every way I can to make it better.
Well, let me ask you this about our political messaging. When we have debates between political candidates, wouldn't it be somewhat of a better system to have each candidate explain the other candidate's point of view to see how accurate they are?
That's sort of an interesting exercise, you know, kind of like when we have intentional listening discussions where it's like, just to make sure I understand your point, and then you say it back to them. I don't know that that's a bad idea. I don't know that many candidates would think that that was very fun to do.
That's interesting because they're supposed to be telling the truth. And if they're able to tell the truth about the other candidate's position, then they're able to distinguish themselves from the other candidate by stating, here's where I stand. But either way, if you're telling the truth about your opponent and then you're making a distinction about your own platform, that gives more of a trust, I think. And there's more integrity in that process.
I think that's correct as well. I think the hard point there is getting candidates on board with it. And I suppose my perspective on this would be that's kind of the work that we have to do. And I wish it wasn't up to us, and I wish it was a little bit easier. But something that I do in my classes is I have our students go through the party platforms, and we pick a list of topics that they care about, and I say, can you go find what each party says on this? Sometimes they address it, sometimes they don't. But that's actually a really illustrative exercise because then they think about what they've heard the different parties stand for versus go and see the document themselves. They've written it out. They're in control of that message. Can you see where they line up relative to what you're thinking about on this issue?
In case you're just joining us, I'm talking with Lindsay Cormack about her new book, How to Raise a Citizen. So, Lindsay, you argue that parents can be catalysts for change. Rather than raise children to echo our own political beliefs, we should nurture informed and engaged citizens who can think critically and form their own conclusions about important issues. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, the reason that I think parents have to do this is there are a few structural constraints that make schools bad sites for this activity. One is that schools have continued to de-emphasize civics in their curriculum from the 1950s to today. Part of it is standardized tests. Part of it is the rise of STEM-focused studies. But they just don't have time to do this sort of work. Another reason that schools can't really do this is a lot of teachers feel under pressure from administrators and parents to not talk about topics that will potentially inflame students or parent groups. And so they're just more reticent to get this sort of work done in the classroom when they can focus on other things that'll help test scores anyhow. So parents can be the places where we can have this practice of how do we have a hard conversation? How do we critically engage in something? How do we accept a perspective that is different than our own? We get 18 years with our kids until they're out of our house. We can do that sort of back and forth practice with them. And schools right now are just a little too constrained to get it done, both in terms of curricular time, but also in terms of teachers' willingness to wade into these topics, not to say anything about state legislatures that increasingly make it hard to talk about some more controversial pieces.
Well, it's kind of catch 22, because you provide a set of frameworks for parents to have meaningful conversations about politics and government with their kids. But what about the schools? If kids have parents who are not interested or aren't willing to engage in this discourse about government and politics in a dispassionate and informative way, can the schools fill that void?
I mean, if I had my way, schools would be doing this, and we would teach it like we teach every other subject, which is you start in kindergarten with small vocabulary and concepts and you build on it. But instead, what we most often do for teaching government in schools is wait until the second semester of the senior year of high school and have a class called government. Now, sure, there'll be social studies, there'll be history classes along the way, but in terms of curricular time, civics gets the lowest amount out of every subject. It's the thing that tests very low on AP scores, and so we just know we're not spending enough time on it. I wish schools could. And for students who have parents who don't care about this, it would be better if schools could cover these things. But right now, I think the move has to come from parents. And as soon as we become comfortable with this, we can argue to our school boards, hey, we need more civics instruction. Hey, if we send kids to public schools that are taxpayer funded, they should understand the system that underlies that. That's just not the reality of where we are right now. So I do wish schools could do more. It just seems like it's going to have to come from parents and homes first.
Well, what role can higher education play in that equation? They have a certain level of influence in the ecosystem, in the education ecosystem. Is it possible that higher education can compel K-12 to include more civics instruction?
That is an interesting question. In my experience on both sides of this, I don't think that K-12 leaders necessarily look to what's happening in higher education to figure out what they're going to teach. And there's no state that requires students take political science or government courses in college, full stop. And so it would be very hard for me to understand the framework that would compel lower grades to get into this. I do think there are roles to be played in higher education. I play those roles on my campus, and there's plenty of nonprofits that are operating in that space. We overall, at nearly every level, just lack a focus on this, and we lack a support for it. When we think about the dollars that go into different focuses, for every $50 that go to a STEM K through 12 program, only about 50 cents go to civics. And so from the beginning to end, we really have something that just doesn't prioritize civic know-how or figuring out how to participate with our government.
Well, you offer insights in your book in dealing with apathy, and you argue that it's absolutely necessary that parents do this work and engage in conversations with their children about politics and government. What are some of the benefits of doing that?
The benefits are numerous. One is it's a really interesting way to get to know your kids and to let them get to know you. You know, we have a hard enough time connecting with our kids as they age. They want to be with their friends more. They want to be on their phones more, whatever. They don't want to be with us. But if we can say, this is an open door, this is something that we can talk about, that's a way for us to get to know each other. And that's really good. Another benefit is our kids are more prepared for college if they sort of understand the importance of these things. Students who have done things like work on campaigns or work in local or state elected officials' offices, that is a good signal for college admissions officers. And so if that's something that you want for your child, it's a little boost. It also really helps with the idea of mental health. And what I emphasize here is having a tie into local politics can be so beneficial for young people because local politics relies on the routine in-person action of people. If we're all suffering from isolation, from younger people to older people, local politics can kind of combat that. You can come together over things that don't feel that fractious. Something like, I'd like a clean park, or hey, our sidewalks are dirty, or hey, the snow's not getting shoveled. These are sorts of community activities that we can get into that rely on seeing people, doing something together, having a purpose. And so showing your kids that caring about your community, caring about politics is a way to do those things has so many benefits, not just for them, but for us as well.
Well, we're running out of time, and I just have one more question. You talk about federalism and the distinct divisions between federal, state, and local governments. And the term itself seems to be at the heart of a history of states' rights, and many parents lack knowledge of this. Can you talk about federalism and why it's an important part of the lessons that parents and kids need to understand?
Yeah, the reason this got included is because when we were doing our interviews with teachers, they said, God, I wish everyone knew more about federalism. And federalism is simply the fact that the federal, state, and local government have different things that they're in control of and some overlapping powers. And it's important for us to understand these things because oftentimes we have this idea of like government, and it's just some sort of place in D.C. where people who we don't see make decisions. But really, so many of our consequential quality of life decisions are happening at state and local levels, which is a much smaller thing to get involved in and a much smaller thing to influence. So the more you understand where the power flows from for different issues, the more likely you are to get things and outcomes that you want because you know who to call on. You know who matters. You know what elections to tune into. And so I think it's important that we understand these processes better and we know what levels are responsible for what things.
Lindsay Cormack is the author of How to Raise the Citizen. Lindsay, this has been awesome. Thanks for an insightful and inspiring conversation.
Thanks for chatting with me. I had a really nice time.